Blog Talk Radio. Eastern family, thanks for listening and being part of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. My name is Neil Holland. Thank you for joining us for episode 58, what we call From the Eastern Files. The program is dedicated to memories, stories, and articles appearing in Eastern publications such as Repartee, the official magazine of the Retired Eastern Pilots Association, and books by former Eastern employees. Today's series, Eastern's Legendary Pilots, Part 3, highlights Captain Vic Merrill, Eastern's number 2 pilot. And, of course, we're including his lovely wife, Toby Wing, the actress. But let's listen to a Eastern commercial, and then we'll get into our program.
How did all these people get in my room? Come fly with me, we'll fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on, fly with me, we'll fly away. Come fly.
Actually, Frank Sinatra never sang a commercial for Eastern Airlines. This is the one I intended to use, but we'll play it anyhow.
Flown Eastern than any other airline in the free world. If you've helped make us America's favorite way to fly, we thank you. If you haven't flown Eastern recently, give us a try. We'll show you we really do earn our wings every day.
Now, from the Eastern Files, we take many of our stories originally appearing in the Retired Eastern Pilots Association's magazine, Repartee. About the most celebrated pilot in Eastern history, it has to be Captain Dick Merrill. And also we're including today the life and times of his beautiful wife, actress Toby Wing. Now, this is from the 1984 issue of the Repartee magazine, and it's by Bob Considine, a famous reporter back in the 40s and 50s. And it goes, "Dauntless Dick is Grounded" is the title. Eastern Airlines passenger recently took a look at the trim, gray-haired captain walking up the aisle of an Electra toward the cockpit and said, "Holy cow, he must be one of the Wright brothers." The pilot was neither Wilbur nor Orville, but in a sense, almost. He was Dick Merrill. Busy with the job of checking out a pilot young enough to be his grandson, Dick, one of the all-time greats of American aviation, is now 67. Eastern makes him a consultant this week, ending a career in which he logged an incredible 37,000 hours and 8 million miles. Some crazy law is responsible for his leaving. Merrill told us at a lunch yesterday, "I can fly an airplane better today than I could 30 years ago. I took the same physical the other day that I took 30 years ago, and nothing has changed." A kid said to me not long ago, "Dick, you old so-and-so, when are you going to quit?" I looked at him and said, "Boy, I'll quit the day I make my first bad approach. And that's not going to be for a long time. But now, well, I'm a consultant. What the hell is a consultant?" The last of a romantic breed of airmen is thus grounded because of age. Merrill has been in the airline business since shortly after World War I. He and another boy from Grenada, Mississippi, picked up a trainer, a Jenny, for a few hundred dollars. Dick learned to fly the Jenny the first day and started carrying passengers the next day. By 1928, he was flying the mail at night between Atlanta and Richmond in a Pitcairn mail wing at 10 cents a mile. "It seems like yesterday," he mused, "I never had it so good. I made $13,000 a year, 3 years in a row. There was no tax back then. I bought me a new caddy for about $1,700 and had a big apartment in Richmond for $60 a month. You could get a steak this big for a buck." Well, a lot of air has gone past since then. Everything's bigger, better, and faster. And you can't hardly move in a cockpit today with all those black boxes telling you what's going on. We flew without anything like that, and we missed less than the lines do today. Missed approaches, that is. Merrill grew up in the industry. He was one of the first to fly the Ford Trimotor, the two types of Curtiss Condors, and the Curtiss Kingbird, the DC-2, DC-3, and anything else that came along in the Eastern Fleet. Frank Hawks called me one day and asked me to fly Northrop Gamma to his friend, Sir Herbert Wilkins, Dick recalled. I said, "Sure, where's the plane?" He said, "Kansas City," and I was in New York. So I said, "Okay, now where's Wilkins? Frank said, "Tierra del Fuego." I left Kansas in a snowstorm on December 13th and landed 4 days later in a snowstorm along the Straits of Magellan. In 4 days, I flew through all the seasons, winter, summer, fall, and back into winter. Had he ever been frightened in the air? Well, Dick says, not really. I came to the conclusion a long time ago that nothing an airplane could do could hurt me. Eddie Rickenbacker likes to say about me, "You may not be the best pilot we have, but you're sure the luckiest." Maybe so. I used to laugh at those kids who tightened up when I took them through a storm and we'd start to toss around. "Relax," I'd tell them. "If you were a roller coaster, you'd have to pay for this kind of ride." I only had to jump once, carrying the mail. I couldn't find the ripcord for what seemed like a long time, but I knew all along it was there and that sooner or later I'd find it. I did, too, and landed on top of a nice, soft mountain down in Piedmont country. "What's the best plane you ever flew?" "That's easy," Dick said. "The Electra." Now, this story was by Bob Considine, and the story was reprinted from the New York Journal American, October 4th, 1961. Well, that concludes the three parts of the series that we've done on Dick Merrill. And if you need to enjoy the first part, go back into our archives on the EAL Radio Show website, and you'll find the archive that does Dick Merrill. Of course, before that was Gene Brown. Now, I'd like to take you to an interesting story that, of course, most of this material is on the internet, but we wanted to tell you a little bit about Dick Merrill's beautiful wife. and this story was printed. It's pretty unusual for a mostly unbilled chorus girl to rate a star on Hollywood Boulevard, but Toby Wing was unique. A genuine granddaughter of the Confederacy, on her mother's side at least, her father's family was pure Maine Yankee. She was born Martha Virginia Wing in Amelia Courthouse, Virginia, in 1915, and taking the stage name Toby after a family nickname. Of course, you wouldn't believe this, but the nickname was taken for a horse they owned. Toby's father, Paul Wing, was an Army officer, and she spent her childhood divided between Virginia and the Panama Canal's American zone. Toby moved to Hollywood in the 1920s with her father, who, discharged, became an assistant director at Paramount Studios, mid-level manager. Toby and her sister, Pat Wing, grew up fantasizing about becoming movie stars and moving to Hollywood in the mid-1920s. Afforded her to score a small number of juvenile parts in Paramount's silent movies her dad was working on, most notably appearing as a 12-year-old Nan in The Pony Express, 1925. She retreated from acting to finish her schooling at her parents' insistence. Stories differ, but she struck up a friendship with Jack Oakey, who introduced her to Samuel Goldwyn at a party. Paramount studio publicist, always a questionable source of facts, claimed she was discovered by Max Sennett and her sister, Pat, while walking to the Santa Monica Pier. Either story seems plausible, since they soon found herself working for both men. She was the last graduate of the studio's in-house high school in 1933. She was a natural brunette, but she dyed her hair platinum blonde, and by 1932, at age 16, she landed a rather historic place in Hollywood history as one of the original Goldwyn girls, billed as the girl with a face like the morning sun in Eddie Cantor's hit Palmy Days of 1931, and then found herself at Paramount working on an early Bing Crosby short. The choreographer on the Eddie Cantor film was Busby Berkeley, who would later hire her for a choice, albeit unbilled, role in 42nd Street, 1933. Her remarkable beauty was not just in the movies. Off camera, she lured to her door many a celebrated suitor, Maurice Chevalier, Alfred Vanderbilt, Franklin Roosevelt Jr., Jackie Coogan, to whom she was engaged to during most of 1935. Singer Pinky Tomlin, briefly engaged in late 1937. And wealthy Toronto playboy Erskine Eaton, to name a few. In 1936, while mourning the untimely death of one of her suitors, Army pilot John T. Helms, whom she claimed to be secretly engaged, Miss Wing swore off men. Falling in love with them, that is, she announced, "I have really given up falling in love with men. Oh, yes, my career is now to be my life." Her numerous engagements became something of a joke around Hollywood. Career-wise, she was seen to be her best benefit while on loan to Warner Brothers in 42nd Street, 1933, prominently featuring her in the unbilled part as the so-called young and healthy girl, the 17-year-old knockout wearing a fox bra being warbled by Dick Powell with dances staged by Berkeley. Anyone watching the hit film would have assumed she was headed for bigger and better things in Hollywood, but it was not meant to be. Toby's career would never show any logical ascent towards stardom. She would be cast in a prominent bill parts, only to revert back as uncredited eye candy, with some appearances lasting mere seconds, such as those as the party guest in Torch Singer, 1933, Private Detective 62, 1933, and a 3-second shot as Warren Williams' supposed girlfriend, and Babyface, 1933, where she simply glares at Barbara Stanwyck, and a feature appearance would be followed by a short. Initially signed to the financially ailing Paramount, she spent much of her contract there on loan. In 1934, production code effectively prevented anything approaching her barely clothed appearances in Come On Marines, 1934, Murder at the Vanities, 1934, and Search for Beauty, 1934, from being repeated. In 1935, she made a tantalizing brief yet silent appearance in La Fiesta de Santa Barbara, 1935, an MGM short promoting only early three-strip Technicolor, more notable today for containing the Gum Sisters' rendition of La Cucaracha, sung by 15-year-old Judy Garland. Toby occasionally scored meteor roles in Poverty Row efforts, receiving star billing in the cheapy Canadian production of Thoroughbred in 1936. Financed by a suitor, and later in struggling Grand Nationals, Mr. Boggs Steps Out, 1938, a low-budget Stuart Irwin vehicle. But in the end, her Hollywood career was a frustrating mix of intense publicity with little substance. And summed up, she had a vastly better press agent than a title agent, than a talent agent. On the publicity side, from mid-1933, early 1938, Toby appeared in dizzying array of movie magazines, scored numerous endorsement contracts, and was easily one of the most photographed starlets in Hollywood. Her personal life also fueled the gossip fires by being pursued by many prominent men. There are dozens of press photos documenting her at nightclubs, surrounded by admiring men well before she was 21, and announcing numerous engagements, notably to Jackie Coogan, during the period he discovered his mother and stepfather had squandered his childhood acting fortune, resulting in the so-called Coogan Law. After appearing in 38 films over 5 years, she ended her movie career where she pretty much began, in an uncredited bit role in the MGM Nelson Eddy Jeanette McDonald musical Sweethearts, 1938, appeared as a telephone operator. Remarkably, despite a film resume overlooked with 5-second walk-ons and parts calling for idiotic yet sexy squeals in her underwear, she was actually quite intelligent. Her stunning beauty guaranteed her lasting appeal. After a typically brief engagement to singer and one-time co-star Pinky Tomlin, she met the man who would be the love of her life, world record-setting Eastern Airlines pilot Dick Merrill, who was over 22 years her senior. They married in June of 1938 and went on to share a remarkable 44-year marriage. After her Hollywood career ended, she accepted a role on Broadway, co-starring in the troubled Cole Porter musical You Never Know, that starred Clifton Webb, Libby Holman, and Lupe Velez, which flopped after 73 performances. She happily retired to their home on Toledo Island to life as a Miami housewife, where her husband, Dick Merrill, flew the Miami-New York City Eastern Airlines route. Her beauty and the vast number of cheesecake photos she took in the 1930s had her competing in good stead with the likes of Rita Hayworth and Betty Grable as a soldier's favorite pinup girl during World War II. During her heyday, she reputedly received more fan mail than Paramount stars Claudette Colbert and Marlene Dietrich. She suffered through the loss of her first child in 1940, and like thousands of wives, a long separation from her husband during World War II Dick was flying the hump for the Military Transport Division and endured her father's capture at Bataan, he survived the death march and subsequent imprisonment. Toby had a second child, Ricky, in 1941, and involved herself in civic affairs, church, and successfully dabbled in real estate in Florida and California. Toby and her husband were devoutly religious, and she taught Sunday school at Miami's All Saints Episcopal Church well into her 80s. She performed in two stage productions in the 1940s, Father of the Bride with Pat O'Brien at the Coconut Grove Playhouse, and a benefit production of The Women, occasionally made the national press when photographed with her famous husband, who was General Eisenhower's pilot during his 1952 presidential campaign. The couple continued to appear publicly at aviation events throughout the 1960s and 70s, during which time Dick was actively involved in Sidney Shannon's Air Museum in Virginia. Sadly, the couple also outlived their youngest child, who was involved in a large-scale marijuana smuggling and murdered in their Miami home while the Merrills were living in Virginia in 1982. Dick died soon afterward, and she spent the remainder of her life actively promoting her husband's rightful legacy as an aviation pioneer and telling everyone how proud she was of her two granddaughters. She received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 1980s and was briefly interviewed in TCM's Busby Berkeley, Going Through the Roof 1998 with her lesser-known chorus girl sister, Pat Wing, who married, his name was Gil, Pat Gil. She died peacefully in her home in Matthews, Virginia in March 2001. Her sister, Pat, died the following year. Now, this was taken from a biography by Patrick King. Additionally, I want to read that her husband, Henry, Dick Merrill, first name Henry, always went by Dick, was the first aviator to fly the transatlantic route round trip. Their first son died in his crib in 1940. Their second son, Richard, was murdered in 1982. She married Dick twice. In 1938, twice. The first wedding was in Tijuana, Mexico. It upset her mother. A second wedding was performed at the home of Sidney Shannon, an early backer of Eastern Airlines and close personal friend of both Dick and Eddie Rickenbacker. In June 1938, in Fredericksburg, Virginia, the second ceremony went unnoticed until another friend of Dick's, Walter Winchell, broadcast the news. Her 41-year-old son, Ricky, was murdered in their Miami home on August 12, 1982. At the time of his death, Ricky was separated from his wife, Hella, and out on bond awaiting sentence after being convicted in federal court of smuggling 1,525 pounds of Colombian marijuana into New Orleans. A co-defendant, Gary Butch Merritt, survived an attempt on his life after his van was blown up the previous June near DeLand, Florida. Ricky's new Jeep Scrambler truck was found at the Miami International Airport on August 16th. The Merrills were living in Virginia at the time, and the nature of Ricky's death could not be withheld from her husband, Dick. Sadly, as we said, he died shortly thereafter. Ricky's murder is still unsolved. Now, a phrase Toby Wing often used about herself was this: because I'm a vivid blonde and people think of me as a chorus girl, they won't believe I'm any more than just that. So that is the story of Captain Dick Merrill and his famous wife, of course, both of them famous in their own fields, professions. And we hope you enjoyed the series. You know, keeping our Eastern family informed is of the greatest importance to this radio show. We want you to join us on Thursdays, every other Thursday, for this show, which we call From the Eastern Files. Thank you for joining us today for the series Eastern's Legendary Pilots. Thursday, July 26, we present another musical showing or show featuring the big band era. You'll want to hear Tommy Dorsey, who will be our guest orchestra. Now, Don Gagnon hosts the show. So make sure you tune in July 26 for some swinging music. Monday, July 23rd, this coming Monday, at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, we air episode 375, featuring an interview with Captain Valery Kudyakov, retired captain with Aeroflot Airlines of Russia. Call in and ask Captain Val what it was like to fly in Siberia. Do you have a story or memory you would like to share with our Eastern family? We would certainly like to hear from you. From the Eastern Files, we'd like to broadcast it during one of our shows. Either you can share your memory live by being on the air with us, or you can just send it to us and we will broadcast your story on the air. Of course, it has to be printed if you're going to send it to us, but we'd certainly like to have you on the show live to present your memory. Send your request to host at EALRadioshow.com. Again, that's host at EALRadioshow.com. And until this coming Monday evening, when we talk a little Russian, which it seems we've been doing a lot of that lately, and we'll see how it's done with the Russian airline Aeroflot with Captain Val as the captain of the flight. So until then, we sign off as we do with each broadcast by saying, bye, Eastern family. We love you, Eastern.